Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another great episode we have here of Suspense Radio. I am your host, John Robb, and we have a great show for you tonight. We are going to have authors Karen Slaughter and Richard Doishan. Both of them are going to be talking about their books, and it's going to be a great show. I want to remind everybody that we are compiling our top 10 list of 2009, and both of these authors are in serious consideration to be on that list, especially with their books. So I want everyone to sit back, relax, because 60 minutes of Suspense Radio starts right now. We got a great Tuesday show for you here lined up, and I want to go back and talk a little bit about what we had on Friday's show. Remember, you guys can always go back and listen to all the archive shows that we have going on here, iTunes, Netflix, all the other podcasting sites, along with suspensemagazine.com, going to Suspense Radio, and right here on Blog Talk Radio, you can listen to them all. So on Friday night, you know, we ended up having a fabulous show. I suggest everyone goes back and, you know, revisits that because, you know, we got a lot of, you know, great information that came out. I mean, you're talking when you have David Morrell on, and he pretty much handled the whole, the whole hour because one of our guests, Juan Gomez, did not show up. We got him rescheduled from Spain. He had a little problem with the time zone, but no big deal. So, you know, David Morrell is a great guest, talked about Rambo, talked about his new book, you know, The Naked Edge and how he did everything. And again, you know, we want to remind everybody that our top 10 list is going to be coming up here in the December issue, kind of year in review. And we are compiling this from hundreds and hundreds of books that we got, you know, in consideration. And we've kind of started breaking it down, but we still want to hear suggestions from you on exactly, you know, what books have moved you over the year, you know, which ones you think are the best and things like that. So, you know, you can always email us here at editor@suspensemagazine.com. You can contact us through the page, suspensemagazine.com, because, you know, we're trying to be as interactive as possible with everyone. It's always great to see, you know, everybody here that we have on the chat and, you know, new faces, old faces. So I want to go ahead right now, because while we're talking about this, is that our first guest that I'm going to bring on here is Karen Slaughter, and she has written a book that just came out in 2010 and is definitely in consideration for top 10 of the year. It's called Broken. So, Karen, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you.
Fabulous. I know that we talked this morning for about 12 hours ago, a little early, but, you know, that was okay. That was kind of interesting. So I want to go ahead and, you know, why don't you tell us a little bit about Broken that came out, and I'm trying to remember the date. Was it June or July?
It was June.
It was June. Okay.
Yeah.
Sometimes the J's get confusing. So,
yeah.
Since you just got back from Germany, you know, confusing can happen.
Right.
So, Broken. So, tell us a little bit about it. I mean, how did it come about? How's it doing? You know, how long was it, you know, that you had going on with writing it?
Well, it's really, well, that's a lot of questions to answer.
I know.
First, the book is, it takes place in Grant County. It's part of my Grant County series. And my character, Sarah Linton, has come home for the first time in 4 years to spend Thanksgiving with her family. And something really bad happens, of course, because this is a thriller. And she calls in the Georgia Bureau of Investigation agent, Will Trent, and he has to come in and figure out what bad thing has happened, and he also has to investigate the police because they've done some things that aren't necessarily appropriate in the investigation.
So this is now your seventh book in the Grant County series, correct, with your first one being Blindsided?
That's correct.
Okay. So now, would you think that now when you wrote Broken and you look back now on Blindsided, kind of how has your character kind of evolved now into this book?
Well, it's very important for me that my characters change. So the Sarah Linton you meet at the beginning of Blindsided is very different from the one you meet in Broken, not least of all because she said some really bad things happened to her across seven books taking place in Grant County. And I really made some difficult choices as far as making some changes in that series. I've written 10 books and as of this year, and the other three books feature a character named Will Trent. And I wanted to bring together those two worlds, so I had to devise a earth-shattering way to do it, which I won't tell anybody. I don't want to spoil it for them if they haven't read it. But I needed to make some changes, and I'm really pleased with how these characters are developing now.
And now, speaking of characters, and I kind of mentioned a little off-air to you that my wife had told me that you took two characters from two separate series that you had going, and you combined them into one book. Now, was that what you were planning on doing from the beginning, or did that concept just kind of hit you later and when you decided to do it?
I decided to do it in my fourth book, which has some very tense situations if anyone's read it. And as I was writing it, I thought, this is something that I want to do eventually, is create a situation where two different series come together and we see the characters in a different way. And so I started planning it from there. And basically, while I was touring and going across the country talking to people for about 6 years, I was lying to them because I knew what was going to happen eventually.
So they were kind of asking you. They thought that this might happen. You're like, oh no.
They had no idea it was going to happen. And I think that's why people read thrillers, because they want to be shocked. And I think I shocked a lot of people. But I like the series together, and I envision eventually they'll be doing their own things, maybe in some books, and some books they're together. And the great thing about the Georgia Bureau of Investigation is they're to the state what the FBI is to the nation, so they can go to any county in Georgia. So what was happening in Grant County is you had murderers and pedophiles and rapists and all these horrible people, and after a while you wonder why anyone's living there. And so I thought, let's make this character, Will Trent, work for the GBI. And Georgia has over 150 counties, so that gives me a lot more places to kill people.
And hide bodies and stuff like that. So
exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah, and so you mentioned, yeah, why would anybody live there? But it's like, well, yeah, but that's the great scene for a book. I mean, that's what you want. You want all that mayhem going on there. So, yeah, that's perfect. Now, when I'm kind of looking back here, you know, and I was looking at your bio and looking over a lot of things that you have, and I wanted to kind of understand, you know, when you said you were in, you had just come back from Germany and everything else. Now, do you do a lot of touring for your book?
I do, and I'm published in 30 different languages, so oftentimes I'm out of the country 3 or 4 times a year.
Okay, and so when you go over there, you do a lot of book signings and things like that, and can you kind of understand when your fans are asking you questions, or do you have a translator?
Oh, definitely. They provide translators for you, and mostly I'm in Ireland or England or Australia or Singapore or Holland, where they speak English very well, obviously, and in Germany, for instance, they have a translator, but most of the people I'm dealing with speak or understand English, so it's not as difficult as you would think.
And when you were probably writing Blindsided, you probably didn't envision the international success that you would have, But when did that kind of start hitting you and you're like, you know, wow, you know, I think I'm really starting to hit it now?
Well, it was really shocking for me because you're exactly right. When you are an American author and you write your first book, generally you don't think about it being on a shelf anywhere other than your local bookstore, and hopefully you'll get a discount. But it was very surprising for me when my foreign rights started to sell and all these countries wanted to publish my book, and it was really exhilarating. So I feel very lucky that the books have done well and I'm able to be a writer, because that's why I do this, is so that I can write my books.
Now, before you were a writer, were you doing something that was in a journalistic field, or did these just things, have you wanted to be a writer for just so long that finally you just said, I'm going to do it?
Well, I worked very hard at being a writer, and for about 10 years, right after I got out of high school, when I was in college, I was working on studying how to be a better writer. I was constantly reading and trying to find my voice, and I wrote really bad books that will never see the light of day. And
I'm just going to ask you about that one. When are we going to see those books?
Never, never. There's a reason why a lot of first books don't really get published. And so I really was a 10-year overnight success, because it took me about 7 years to get an agent and then another 3 years before my first book came out. So I feel really lucky that I had that time to work on being the sort of author I wanted to be. And I set a goal for myself to get published before I turned 30, and I inched in right under the line. So I feel very, very fortunate that happened.
So 7 years to find an agent. I mean, there must have been a lot of times when you're like, this ain't going to happen for me. I mean,
yeah.
That's a long time.
Well, it was off and on. I would work on sending stuff out, and then I would get rejections, and I would really look at the rejection letters, because I thought some of these people aren't just sending back form letters. They're really giving me input in what's working and what's not working for them. And I would take the criticism if I thought it was valid and try to incorporate changes into the work. And sometimes I would just scrap an idea altogether because I thought, they're right, it's not really working. But most of the things I got were saying, we like how you write, but we don't like the story. And I was at the time working on historical fiction. And so it got to a point with my agent where she said, well, what do you want to write? And I said, I've always wanted to write a thriller. And she said, well, do that. And I did, and that's how I got blindsided. So I feel I keep saying I'm lucky, but there are a lot of writers out there listening to this, and they know that as talented as you could be, it still takes an awful lot of luck to get into this business. And so she really loved the thriller that I came up with, and she took a long time to read it. And while she was reading it, I started writing the second book, and while she was reading the second book, I got an outline for the third, and she said, I think I can do something with this. And I said, good, because I want a 3-book deal, and she was able to get that. And I don't think that publishers are taking those sorts of risks anymore. Obviously, lots of people don't even have jobs anymore in publishing, but I got in right under that wire and was able to get a nice deal that was nice enough where I felt comfortable enough to be a full-time writer.
Now, when you were talking about that you know, in high school and college, that this is something that you knew you wanted to do, with what you were reading back then, has that kind of changed from what you're reading now? Or are you still, influenced sort of by those same books that you read in high school and college?
Well, thank God I'm not reading the same stuff, because if college does anything, it makes you never want to read again.
You got that right. I'll give you that one. You got that one right.
My focus was Renaissance poetry, and I loved it when I was reading it, but I don't think I could look at Spencer now and explicate it as readily as I could when I was doing the classes full time. I just look back and think, what the hell were you thinking? But it really, if you think about the way that during this very hostile political time that the Renaissance was, where artists needed patrons, and they were told, or rather they were careful about language, and they used a lot of coded language in their writing, and I think thrillers do the same thing. I think that a lot of times you have to hide the clues in plain sight, and you have to give little hints to things, because I always try to be fair with my readers when I plot my books, and I want to make sure that by the time they get to the revelation of who the bad person is, they think, oh, that makes perfect sense. I never want them to get to that and think, wait a minute, the butler did it. You know, it just doesn't make sense. And so I think that helps me in many ways to help plot out how a thriller should work, because there's a lot of thrilling stuff happening in that sort of poetry and the writing from that time. So I feel really good saying that I went from Renaissance poetry to thrillers, because I think people who understand both understand how they work together. But also, my reading has always been very eclectic, and I love Flannery O'Connor, I love Margaret Mitchell, I love Harper Lee, but there are many contemporary authors I love. I think Denise Mina is probably one of the most gifted writers working today. I love Ann Tyler. I think Margaret Atwood takes incredibly big risks, and sometimes she spectacularly fails, and other times she creates the most beautiful books that you could possibly imagine. And I love writers like that who are testing themselves. And Lee Child is another one of my favorites. So I really read across the board.
Now, I believe that you were at Thriller Fest in July. Am I correct?
No, I was in London in July. I was at the one the year before.
Okay, because I didn't see you there, but I thought that I think I saw your name in the program, because I was wondering if you did you ever do a class during, you know, Thriller Fest or Craft Fest? And not, I guess it wasn't this year, but you know, the past year. Have you done that to help out, you know, other writers?
Well, I'm not a very good teacher, and I found that out the hard way, because I did a writer's retreat in Hawaii with my friend Jackie Machard, and she talked me into doing the class, and we did it together, and I made one woman cry and called another guy an asshole, so I don't think they'll invite me back. Actually, that was the last year, and the guy agreed he deserved it, and the woman, though, she said she... it helped her with a breakthrough in her writing, but I felt so awful about it, so I figured that would probably be my last class. But I did a panel at Thriller Fest the year before last, and it was a lot of fun going there, and there are just some really great authors there, and I'm going to BoucherCon this year.
Oh, and we'll be at BoucherCon this year, so we'll get to see
you
then. Yeah.
Yeah, we're doing Mark Billingham, Martin Waits, Denise Mina, John Connolly, and I are doing a panel together. We try to do one every year. I think it's at 11:30 on Saturday.
Wow, that's pretty heavy hitting right there.
Yeah, we like to have our fun. Laura Lippman usually does it, but she's out for personal reasons, and so we got Denise Mina to do it. I think Mark must have gotten her drunk, but she agreed to do it readily enough.
Now, you see a lot of different authors today kind of writing together. You know, they're kind of doing a compilation of maybe something together. Have you thought about doing that, or is there any authors that you were thinking about maybe writing with, like putting a book together?
Well, I did a short story collection several years ago and had people like Denise Mina, Lee Child, Peter Robinson, Linda LaPlante actually did her first short story ever in her life for me. She did a wonderful job. But I like short story collections. I don't like collaborations. I'm not sure how those work. I think they can work really well for some authors, but for me, I wouldn't want someone to intrude in my story, and I wouldn't want to go into someone else's, especially if you think about how one of the best things I think about a Denise Mina book is Denise Mina wrote it. And if I wrote the same story, it would be completely different. So I try to stay out of that, but I guess other people are far more talented at that kind of collaboration, and I appreciate it as a reader, but not so much as a writer.
Now, in your grant, I'm going to go back here to your Grant County series, because a lot of people, when they see, oh, this is broken as the seventh book, well, gosh, you know, can I pick it up, or should I start with Blindsided? When you hear that question, what is your response to your fans?
I write my books so that you can read them out of order. People who are sticklers for order like I am, I always want to read from the very beginning. And
like my wife, she does that.
Yeah, but I love reading. So when I find an author and there are seven or eight or 15 or 20 books in, I think it's great to go back and get all of them, especially because they're paperback, so they'll be cheaper. But I'd like to find out what the characters are doing in the very beginning and how they end up in the present. And that's a real joy for me as a reader. But I understand people out there are different, and you can certainly read them out of order, or you don't even have to know anything about any of the characters to pick up Broken. And I write them so that you know exactly where you are, no matter where you pick up the book.
Okay, so then if you were to go ahead and say, you know, you can pick up anyone you want in order, which one would you say is the best one for someone who might not have read any of the Grand Count series to say, pick this one up first because it'll really get you into the series and you'll just want to keep going?
Well, I would probably start with Indelible, which is my fourth book, and it's kind of sort of a prequel, and I really wrote it that way because I wanted to explain how two people got together. And it's a real good snapshot of their early relationship. And, of course, I'm not writing romantic suspense by any stretch. My books are very graphic and gritty and very character-driven. But if people are looking for a relationship in the books, then that's certainly one that shows how this relationship develops. And I like it because there's a lot of gunplay and there's a lot of action, and that's the sort of book I like to read. So it was a lot of fun to write.
Now, you mentioned, you know, that you don't write romantic suspense. Now, is that something that when people see your name, they automatically assume, oh, well, a woman writing a suspense, it has to be romantic? Is that kind of a stereotype you get?
Sometimes, or people think that I'm doing knitting mysteries or cat mysteries or something like that. But I think they do that at their own, to the lack of their own benefit, because if you look at what, for instance, Lisa Gardner is doing, or Tess Gerritsen, or Kathy Reichs, or me, we're really writing books that are tough books. And oftentimes when I do a signing, the men will come up to me and say, wow, you know, you're a tough writer, and my wife told me to read this, and I didn't want to read it because I don't read books by women, and I was just really blown away. And it's somewhat of a compliment, because I always think, well, why don't you read books by women? That's just crazy.
Now, I'm looking here on your FAQ, on your website, which is Karin Slaughter, and that's K-A-R-I-N Slaughter.com for anyone who want to go out and see more information about what Karin has done and what she's doing here with Broken. And I'm trying to find, oh, and here it is. So you say that the most difficult book you wrote was Kiss Cut because of its subject, dark matter. Now, when you were writing that, did you know that you were going to have to pull yourself into that dark place to do it, and that's what made it very difficult for you to finish, or was it difficult for you to start?
Well, it was just a difficult subject matter all around because it deals with child abuse, and that's actually one of the books that I'm most proud of writing because I was very careful writing about that subject matter. I wanted to be respectful. I didn't want to titillate. I didn't want someone picking it up and thinking I was exploiting the situation, and I was really careful to balance the darkness with some lightness because in the context of the story, you get a lot of information about Sarah and the positive relationship she has with her parents and her family. And so there's a sense of safety within the darkness. And most of my books are that way. They really are just about normal people who meet some sort of violence, and it tests their character. And that's where I got the title for Broken, is from a Hemingway quote, because he's one of his most famous sayings is, the world breaks everyone, and some are stronger in the broken places. Well, I do break my characters in many different ways, but it makes them stronger, and it makes them interesting. And that's what I'm going to always be focusing on in my books, is not just the violence and not just the victim and the criminal, but what does this do to the people investigating the crime, and what does this do to the medical examiner, and how does it change the relationships that they have with other people?
Now, seeing as how you know, wrote about child and child crime and things like that, is there an area that you're not willing to go because it's just too taboo that you just won't touch it?
Well, I I'm not one of these people who says anything is too taboo. If a story is good, a story is good. And one of my favorite short stories is by Barbara Gowdy. It's in a collection called We So Seldom Look on Love. And it's called The Kiss, and it was made into a movie, and it's about a woman who's a necrophile. And when you think about that, my God, how could you ever write a story about that? It just seems like something that would be completely taboo. But it's
being a parent, that would be difficult. Yeah, being a parent, that would be difficult to read.
But it's a beautiful love story about a girl who purposefully works at a mortuary because she's in love with dead people, you know? So you would never think that that could be done well. So I think that's an interesting lesson in never saying never.
Well, I think we laugh about that, but after one episode of Jerry Springer, maybe you can understand why somebody would want to do that, because they don't talk back to you.
Yeah, exactly.
So I guess you can understand that one.
Well, gee, I hope you got that from Jerry Springer.
I did. No,
okay.
I didn't.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
So here's the big, everyone always wants to know, it's always, what have you done for me lately? So what are you working on now?
Currently I'm working on the book that's going to come out next year, and it's called Fallen, and it's a really fun story, not for my characters, of course, but I got the idea because I went on a training session with the Georgia Bureau of Investigation. And they had this abandoned school, and they had a person in there, a live person in there, pretending to be a school shooter. And they had actors and role players who pretended to be wounded people and teachers and kids, and they were all screaming, and the lights were out, and each agent had to go through the school and find the shooter and kill them. And this is a training exercise that's in direct response to what happened at Columbine and to some extent what happened at Virginia Tech with the shootings, where the police did what they're usually told to do, which is set up a perimeter and go door to door through the classrooms in the building and clear out each classroom, clear out the wounded, and then isolate the shooter and negotiate. Well, after they learned some hard lessons at Columbine and Virginia Tech, where maybe some people died while they were doing these perimeter searches, they decided to give a new directive to the agents, which is ignore the wounded, ignore the screaming, ignore everybody else, find the shooter and kill them. And we saw the culmination of this training at Fort Hood, where the woman MP just went in and started shooting. Well, 10 years ago, she would have stayed outside and set up a perimeter. Meanwhile, many more people would have been shot in there. And she was shot herself, so it's a very risky thing. But police officers are there to save lives, and they know that they need to go in and do what needs to be done. And so I was with the Georgia Bureau of Investigation all day doing these exercises where one agent would go into the school, try to find the shooter. Sometimes they had to kill him, sometimes not, with simmunition, of course, which, by the way, still hurts. And I was so exhilarated following them through, and my adrenaline was pumping, and I thought, I really want to write about an agent going through something like this. And the book doesn't open in a school. There's no school shooting. But I send my agent, Faith Mitchell, into a similar situation where she has to find a bad guy, and she could be shot at any moment. And I just thought, this is a perfect example of research really informing a book. And it's a really powerful opening. I can't wait for people to read it.
So when you were with them, did you actually get to follow them in while they were doing their exercise? Did they let you become a victim in the building so you could see both sides of it?
Yeah, I did the role playing. I followed them through. And the amazing thing was they timed them on each run. And none of them, I think there were about 30 agents that day, none of them took more than a minute and 20 seconds to go through this large school and find the shooter. And if you think about how many lives that saves for them to go directly in there and find this person and take them out or stop them, then that's a miraculous thing, because usually there's just one shooter. Columbine was a rare example. Even the very first school shooter, who was a woman, by the way, a young girl, and the Boomtown Rats have that song, I Don't Like Mondays, because that was her response when they said, why did you open fire on this school? She said, I don't like Mondays. But historically, it's just usually one person who's a loner, and their goal is to kill as many people as they can. They don't necessarily care if they're dead or not. And so the police are told this, and they know to just go in and do whatever they can to kill this person or to stop them.
Yeah, I remember when I was younger, I think the first thing I remember was the shooting in the McDonald's. And I'm trying to remember if it was San Jose. I think it was out in California. I think that's when I first learned of, you know, people getting just crazy walking in and just shooting places up for reasons you had no idea. Yeah. So, well, that is some fascinating research. I mean, that has to be probably one of the top researches on your list that you've done for a book.
Oh, definitely. Now, I've done a lot of crazy things that I've said were research if the IRS asked, but this was actually the most fun.
No. I really did have to go to Singapore to research this. I did. That's a write-off. Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, everybody, we are talking here with Karin Slaughter, and you want to go check out her website. It's karinslaughter.com, where you will be able to find out more about the book that she has written, which is Broken, which came out in June of 2010. And so it's out now. So you can go pick it up. And all of her books that she has out there, she has them in order for those people who have to read them in order, for the Grant Cowering series, the Will Tran Atlanta series, and then the Georgia series, which has the book Undone, which was in 2009. So, Karin, I want to thank you so much for coming on. It's been a blast. We will definitely be looking for Fallen coming out. And you said, is that going to be summer release?
Yes.
Okay. Because the opening just sounds true. I mean, just sounds amazing. So I definitely want to see what you did with that and what kind of, you know, research spin you're going to put on that, because I think that's very interesting, especially in today's day and age where you're seeing this happen more and more, not just in schools, but now in workplaces and everything else. So very, very interesting and well done. So thank you so much for coming on and telling everybody that. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
All right. So we will talk, and we'll see you at BachelorCon in about less than a month.
Definitely. Yeah, that's great.
All right, Karin. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So, again, that was Karin Slaughter that we had on, karinslaughter.com. Go out, check out her book, Broken, came out in 2010. And we are going to go ahead with our next guest who was going to be on about 3 weeks ago. Something happened, couldn't make it, but you know what? That's okay, because he's here now. And I know I'm going to mispronounce his last name, but I'm going to try it anyway. And it's Richard Deutsch.
And hopefully, Deutsch.
Roy, I got it right. I can't. That's your publicist wrote it out for me, and I said, okay, I'm going to try it. So here we go. So I'll give David kudos for that one.
He's a good man. He's a good man. We spell it, we spell it different than everybody else, but we think we spell it the right way. So it's Deutschland, as in Deutsch. So,
well,
it works for us.
Well, his first name is Richard. Last name is spelled Deutsch.com, and you can go on and find out about Richard's book, which just came out. And so, Richard, The Thieves of Darkness. How's it doing for you right now? And you know, how is it?
You know, it's doing terrific. It's, you know, interestingly enough, I have two books a year that come out from Atria. And the paperback of The 13th Hour came out in July, and it had the first chapter of The Thieves of Darkness in it. And it really got the ball rolling. So when the book arrived the last week of August, we just had terrific sales, and it's doing very well internationally also. And, you know, I couldn't be more excited right now.
Well, like I mentioned, that I don't think you heard the intro I know you didn't hear the intro because you came on about 10 minutes ago, but we are compiling our best top 10 books of 2010, and The Thieves of Darkness is one of those books that is in the running to become one of the top books of 2010, because you have done a masterful job, and it was just a great book that came out after The 13th Hour. And speaking of The 13th Hour, isn't there some news that you'd like to talk about that book? I'll let you say it. I know what it is, but I don't think anyone else knows what it is.
Yeah, no, the good thing is that's actually being made by New Line Cinema, and the screenplay is done, and I am one of the few authors who is actually happy with the screenplay. They actually interpreted the book perfectly, and it doesn't deviate from the story that's in the spine of my book right now, and they should be announcing the director and an awesome star for it probably in about 3 weeks' time. So I couldn't be happier right now. And, you know, we're actually on the verge of a deal for The Thieves of Darkness. And we were hoping that would be done today, but hopefully it'll be done in the next couple of days. So I'm a very, very, very lucky person to be dancing in two worlds right now.
Absolutely. Now, you said that the screenplay was, you know, almost perfectly to the book. So now, did you have any say in that, or did they just happen to find a screenwriter that knows that the book should be as good as the movie?
You know, it was written
by Mike. Or the movie
as
good as the book.
Yeah, exactly. They hired Mike Brandt and Derek Haas, who did 310 to Yuma, and they did Wanted. And I really spent a lot of time with them and, you know, actually played a lot of golf with them.
I know.
But,
I see you're an erratic golfer on there. I was going to get to that.
But, you know, they were terrific. They fell in love with the book, and they actually fought to write the screenplay when New Line put it out, put the offers out there. And it was interesting. I was a little nervous when they sent it to me. I'm saying, you know, should I read it? So I gave it to my 19-year-old daughter, and she read it. She's like, Dad, this is great. You really should sit down, and, you know, you'll really enjoy it. And I did. And, you know, I'm just thrilled. You know, but the interesting thing on The Thieves of Darkness, which is just out, the deal that we're doing, I'm actually co-writing the screenplay.
Oh, so it's definitely hands in that one. That's good. Not a lot of authors get that opportunity.
No, they don't. You know, and I've got a terrific film agent who, you know, set this up. And it'll be interesting going back and taking this novel, which is truly spans the globe. And as The Thieves of Darkness runs everywhere from New York to London to Istanbul to India to Amsterdam, and it's really a globetrotter, and it moves very, very quickly. And my writing style is very cinematic, obviously, because, you know, they seem to be purchased by Hollywood quite often. But it'll be fun to go back and revisit the story and figure out, you know, how can I really make this pop on the screen and try to bring a really good story, out into a movie, because I haven't seen a lot of great adaptations lately.
Well, you know, I'm kind of amazed that you're not yawning right now, because you are someone who writes from 9 p.m. to 3 a.m. You get up, you go to work at 7, and, you know, you're a musician. You just said, you know, you did guitar and piano, not to mention, you know, all the investment stuff and the businesses that you run. How do you juggle all of that and make it work?
You know, I am extremely disciplined. I was a workaholic. The first thing I wrote was actually my first novel, which was called The Thieves of Heaven. And I wrote that about 7 years ago. And I just wrote it to see if I could write. And I was always artistic, but I wanted to see a book that nobody else had written. And I created this character, Michael St. Pierre, who's a thief, you know, a gentleman thief, but he was reformed. And he ended back up into this world, and I sold it, and I actually sold that book to 20th Century Fox. And they said, you know, you've got to write a second book. And when I sat down to write the second, I fell in love with doing this. And so much to the point where I actually just sold my real estate company a couple years ago and just have an investment fund now, where I'll write from 9 at night to 3 in the morning. When I get up in the morning, I'm writing again until about 1 in the afternoon. So that discipline that came from all this business, I'm just applying that to my writing. And I'll write about 2,500 to 3,000 words a day.
So let me guess. Your investment firm has a massive stake in 5-Hour Energy drinks, right?
Exactly. Or I just steal them out of my kids', you know, little mini freezers.
Exactly. That is hilarious. I mean, yeah, to have that kind of discipline, it definitely shows, you know, in your writing, because it's that kind of discipline that every author needs just to get, you know, just to get a good story down. But with everything that you're doing, I'll tell you, wow, I mean, that's just a monumental task. And I have a question here that just got sent to me. They want to know what made you decide to write the book backward.
You know what's interesting? When I came to writing without any writing education except for being a voracious reader. And so I approach this that I'm a storyteller. And I think if you're a storyteller, just as like being a writer, you have to tell a story every day. So I sit down and I'll jot out three paragraphs of a story. And I do that every single day. And when you do that 365 days a year, you end up with a lot of ideas. Most
yes,
of them are
do.
Crap. But if you get 10% of them are good, you know, that's 36 ideas. And I jotted down on April 26, 2008, a story that goes backwards. And I had never seen a book where you open up to the last chapter. And I came up with this idea for the 13th hour where a man, he starts out in an interrogation room and his wife has been murdered. And he's given the opportunity to step back in time in one-hour increments to try and stop her murder. And I thought, what fun would this be trying to write it backwards? And I sat down, and at the same time, I wanted to see if I could write a book in 30 days. So I gave
30
myself
days?
This, yeah, I gave myself this huge hurdle. And I just started writing. I had more fun doing this because I had to remember things that hadn't happened yet.
Exactly.
And so as you're going along, you're getting to 2 o'clock and you're writing about something in the future that's actually in the past. And so it was like this huge Rubik's Cube in my head. But it could not have been more fun. And it was such a challenge. But when I got through to the end of it, it actually turned out to be this story that, you know what, I could turn around and sell. And I had just done my deal with Simon & Schuster for the Thieves of Darkness and a Thieves series. They turned around and we sold that to New Line. We sold the 13th Hour to New Line and then sold it to Simon & Schuster. But, you know, it came out of coming up with ideas every day, you know, because I think that is, you've got to sharpen the sword as a writer, but you've got to sharpen that sword as a storyteller. And if you do that, you can come up with these kind of out-of-the-box ideas. And I'm sure other people have written books that were backwards, but you know, the way I did the 13th Hour, it's very character-driven, you know, with this guy trying to save the life of his wife. And obviously, it's so much more than that. There's plane crashes and robberies and all these things that, you know, all contribute to a very high-octane thriller. So
when you told your wife and you said, okay, you know what, I'm going to write this book backwards and I'm going to do it in 30 days, and she goes, well, what do you need? Did you mention the old line, a lot of Hot Pockets and Mountain Dew, and just start going?
You know, it's so funny. That was in the summer of 2008 in July. And I really didn't see anybody except when I brought my computer to the pool. And I would sit in the shade, you know, with a little folder over it so I could see the screen. But I literally wrote from the moment I got up to the moment I went to bed. But I was so enthralled with it. It was like the book was unfolding in front of my eyes, you know. I wrote it the same way the reader reads it. But you know, my family was a little annoyed by the time I got to the end of that month, and so I had to take a little respite for a bit.
Well, I was going to say, because you did that in the month of July, and that's like prime golfing season. I'm not sure, you know. I know you live like in the Northeast, and that's like prime golfing season.
It is, but you know what? Actually, golf is my least favorite sport. I don't even consider it a sport. I think it's more like a game. I'll give you that.
I don't think it's an actual sport. It is like a strategy. It's more of a game of skill.
Yeah, it is. But it sucks up so much time.
I know. I've been playing since I was 8, so I understand.
You know, I swim, bike, run. I do a lot of like crazy things, and I can do so much in 4 hours. And, you know, playing golf, I love to play with my wife, you know. That's always great because we're alone and, you know, we get a few hours just to talk. But so losing that month of July, I didn't do any triathlons that month.
You didn't know, I was going to say. I'm just sitting here and, like, you know, the Thieves of Darkness, or the Thieves of Darkness is, now, is that considered your seventh book?
That is, The Thieves of Darkness is actually, it's my fifth that's been released, because of Thieves of Heaven, then The Thieves of Faith, and I had a thing called Embassy, which was really a book, a novella that came out last October, then The 13th Hour, and Now the Thieves of Darkness.
So then Four and Half Past Dawn, what exactly are those? Are those out of print now? Can anybody
No, Half Past Dawn is my book that comes out in February, end of February, beginning of March 2010.
Oh, okay. So that's the new one.
Yeah, so that's the new one. And then I just actually finished up my next Thieves book, which will be next September.
Okay.
So I finished what will be my seventh book just the other day.
So, yeah, well, and I'm just looking at Embassy here, and it says novella you wrote in 5 days. Now, why did it take you 2 days longer than Sylvester Stallone to write Rocky? I mean,
Come on,
you're lagging, man.
I was really slacking. You know what?
You
were. You know, the problem that happened, Simon & Schuster, when I did my book deal, I was originally at Random House, and I moved over to do my next two Thieves books with Simon & Schuster, and I went in and I said, look, you know, I can write a lot, and I would love to write a couple books a year. They're like, sure. You know, most people have enough problems getting one book out. I said, no, seriously, I will do two books. And so when I wrote The 13th Hour, it wasn't under contract. It was just for fun. And they realized, hey, this guy can actually write. So when Vuk went to Simon & Schuster, they're like, look, we need a story really quick. Do you have somebody who can write quickly? They picked up the phone and like, Richard, remember you said you can write quick? I said, yeah. They said, can you pull out your story ideas? And I gave them five different story ideas. They chose Embassy. And they said, you know, can you write this in a couple of weeks? I said, I'll write it in 5 days. And I pulled that same routine and, you know, cranked the book out. So.
Wow.
And that was fun too. You know what? It's great to work. I thrive under pressure. You know, I don't know how everybody writes. But when I have pressure on me, I just get this focus going. And a lot of that, I think, comes from business because I'm drawing on so much of the life that I have lived, and pulling that in. And I just have this discipline that I'm afraid if I don't keep going that somebody's going to take this dream away from me.
Well, I'll tell you, here's your next conquest then, since it seems you like to challenge yourself. I want you to jump out of a plane and write a short story while you're falling and see if you can finish it till you reach the ground.
That would be a cool challenge. You know what I tried to do? I generally try to make my own trailers, and I did a couple of jumps where I was trying to get the Thieves of Darkness holding on to it and having it filmed, and I kept dropping it.
Oh, my Lord.
So that didn't work. I was trying to figure out, how can I incorporate this into my writing, or how can I get this into a commercial or something? But if there's a way, I'll find it.
Now,
actually, in the Thieves of Darkness, one of the opening, the first chapter is actually a skydiving chapter. So it's just so much fun.
Oh, yeah, it is. It is. I remember because I remember when I was reading the book, because I remember starting out with the basketball scene with the guy and the girl in there playing basketball. So I thought you were a big basketball kind of person when they were doing that.
You know, I suck at basketball. It's the one sport I can't play. I am vertically challenged. I'm only about 5'10". I've got a terrible shot. So it was ironic that I made it a basketball scene.
That was. Now, I have a couple there's some fans out here that want to know, are you left-handed?
I am not. But I can tell you something interesting. I fight left-handed. I shoot. I am left-eye dominant. But I think I was made to be a righty. I do everything else lefty. I fold my hands, you know, lefty. I box lefty. If you've ever done that, when you push somebody from behind, you put the more stable foot out. I put the left foot out. I get on a plane with my left foot. So I'm righty, but I think I'm just a frustrated lefty.
I gotcha. So, and you might have been one of the things where they just, your parents or teachers were just like, nope, you're going to put the pencil in your right hand, and that's what you're going to do, and you just don't remember.
And if you saw my handwriting, that totally, supports that hypothesis.
So now another question I have from the chat room here is, what book do you believe really propelled you to the point where you were, this recognizable name?
I think The 13th Hour, for a couple reasons. I've got... the Thieves series has actually, it's done very well, and it's done tremendously well internationally. But with The 13th Hour, that's gotten a lot of press coverage in Hollywood with the film. And it was just a different book. And I think that's was really the story that opened up a lot of eyes. And because it was different, it attracted some different readers in. And a lot of those people, once they read that story, they went back and they picked up Thieves. And, you know, it's really helped with Thieves of Darkness, which just came out.
So basically it took you into your fourth book before, you know, you kind of hit it where, you know, a lot of authors, well, I guess it's kind of your third. It would kind of end up being more along the lines of your third because it was, you know, you're not going to count, I guess, Embassy as like the novella.
Yeah.
So it was really like your third. And that's, and when we were in Thriller Fest, we kind of heard from a lot of authors that like the third book is like the charm. That's like the one that seems to do it for them. They get to that third book, and it's like all of a sudden now they're starting to become more known. And I, you know, and I just wonder why that is. I wonder why it takes so long for the public to get into it. Is it because the publishers nowadays aren't doing a lot of publicity for new authors of the stories?
I think that's what it is. It, you know, it's such an odd model when you think about it from a business point of view. You don't advertise. You don't see anything on TV. Except for James Patterson or some people who pay for it themselves. You really don't hear the ads on the radio. It's really a groundswell and word of mouth. And paperback books, I think, are point of purchase. Somebody sees a great cover, they read the back, they think it sounds good, they'll buy it. You need an established base in order to support a hardcover. But I just, when you look at all of the media that is done for all of the other forms of entertainment, they really put a lot of money behind it. And I just think it's...
Well, it's calculated in their budget. I mean, when they talk about films, and it's a $100 million budget, you know, I would say probably 20% of that is marketing budget.
Oh, yeah.
Not more.
Yeah, no question. It goes crazy. But, you know, right now, they... Simon Schuster's terrific. But a lot of publishers, they've cut out their marketing budgets. They don't do advertising.
Yeah, we found
and
that out.
It can be absolutely crazy and frustrating, you know, for a lot of authors out there. But, you know, that's where it comes to where it's lucky for me is I come from a business point of view, so I do understand that, you know, where the numbers lay. And I realize I've got to go out there and sell it myself. You know,
well,
I want to continue to write.
That's why we started the magazine. I mean, but this is exactly why we started the magazine, too, because there were really no good outlets for thriller and suspense and mystery writers to go to be able to have fans come to say, where can I go to find out about these people? Because I don't know of them. You know, I only know maybe 5% of all the thriller writers that are even out there. And you have a lot of people that don't even know who you are that are listening to the show that are like, wow, very interesting. I had no idea who this guy ever was. So, you know, that's what we're trying to do to help, which is why we started this back in 2008.
Yeah, well, you know what? You guys are great because it really, you know, when you love a thriller, you love a suspense, you love a mystery, you can go out and you find it. You know, when you pick up your magazine, it's immersive. You get to read about new authors. You get exposed. Where's a new author who has a first book come out? Where does he get exposure? You know, and
our September issue, we have 6 of them.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
that's it.
But you know what? This is why I did the book because it's a very interesting concept in that it marries two mediums and it has these video vignettes in it. And so when they launched the book, I got some nice coverage in the New York Times on the front page. And that, you know, gave some help to the 13th Hour. But then when the iPad came out, they have this on the iPad. And so it gets an additional bump there. So when you've got your name in different areas, it's like an awareness campaign. You know, a lot of times they say that it really takes to your fifth or sixth book until you can really self-sustain. And I think that is just awareness. It's just seeing somebody's name. Look at Karen Slaughter. You go to the bookstore, you constantly see her name out there, and that creates awareness. But if you see somebody for the first time, you're like, who is this guy? Am I going to dedicate 10 hours of my time on this guy that I've never met, that I've never read? So, you know, you've got to figure out a way, how do I draw them in? And I think you know, that was one of the things with the 13th hour. Here's a book that's written backwards. If you don't know who Richard Deutsch is, big deal. But here's a book that's written backwards. How cool would this be to read? Let me take a chance. Let me read the first chapter and see if it's worth going forward. That's a way to market.
Well, real quick here, last question. So I just kind of thought of this in my head when we started talking about marketing budgets for movies or TV shows or anything else that you see. Do you think it would be smart for a first-time author that gets a deal in Random House, Simon & Schuster, Penguin, wherever, to say, don't give me any money or any advance. Take anything that you are going to give to me and put it in marketing so my book gets out there, because then that will help me on the second one, to where you could actually probably do better at an advance on the second one than if you were to put the two together, if they, you know, because they had no marketing and it didn't get that well received anyway.
I do. You know what? I think that if somebody had that opportunity to do, I think if they could dedicate 50% of it or more, great. But what they've got to also do is they've got to have an agreement to work in tandem, because a lot of these publishers, you want to ensure that the money, that's your money. You want to ensure that it's being spent wisely. You may want to take that advance and, you know, take a portion of it and use it with your own publicist. You know,
well, I think they have to. I think they are doing that now. We're seeing that more and more, that they're hiring these outside publicists away from their publisher.
Yeah, well, can I tell you, and this is just a little advice, a lot of those publishers, and I hate to say it, I mean the publicists are whores. Because what they do is, and it's terrible, they prey on writers. They say, here we go, we've got this, we're going to get you on this show and this show and this show, and they give you this contract that looks amazing. And so all of a sudden you think you're going to get all this coverage, and you've got to be real. You've got to understand that you're a first-time author, and a newspaper may not cover you. And generally they don't, you know, cover a paperback book. So there's, you know, it's terrible that you get this education, this baptism by fire, by spending $10,000 to $15,000 on a publicist, and they don't guarantee anything.
Right, and see this thing, and when we did Suspense Publishing, which we have out right now, and we have a marketing plan that goes in there too, but we looked at what everyone else was doing, and we said, you know what, we know what they're doing. We'll do it for, you know, far less expensive than anyone else is doing, just because it's the time to do it, because we're going to do the exact same thing that they do, and there's no guarantee that anybody's going to pick up a press release or do anything like that. So absolutely, I mean, you know, but that's what we're, you know, and so we're trying to help out because we know that money's tight, but we know that marketing has to be done. So,
Well,
yeah,
that's
everybody.
Why your stuff is great. That's why having, you know, a magazine like you guys, it's reputable. And, you know, what a great place to feature new people in.
Well, Richard, I'll tell you, we have just burned through the time here. And everybody, we've been talking to Richard Deutsch here. That's Richard, D-O-E-T-S-C-H, talking about his latest book, that's The Thieves of Darkness. His book, The 13th Hour, that's going to be out probably in about a year or so in the big screen that it was just taken out. So, and then don't forget that his book, Half Past Dawn, is going to be coming out probably in January or February of 2011. So, Richard, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us tonight. And
hey, thank you. I so appreciate it.
All right. Thanks again.
All right. You take care.
So, everybody, I want to remind you while we have this short amount of time that Tess Gerritsen and Lisa Black will be here on Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific time. You don't want to miss that one, because Tess Gerritsen is Rizzoli and Isles, and Lisa Black is big in forensic. So suspensemagazine.com, richarddeutsch.com, karenslaughter.com, check them all out. Top 10 books of 2010. We want to hear what you think and who you have. So until then, we are going to see you on Friday night at 6 o'clock with Tess Gerritsen and Lisa Black. Thank you so much for joining us. Good night, everybody.